Good morning and welcome to the Volley Nerd Podcast. This is your host, Davis Ransom. And today on the podcast, I am so stoked to have my best friends and excellent coaches, Coach Sean Thomas from Coast Volleyball Club. Thanks for being here, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Davis.
Absolutely. And a good friend of mine, longtime excellent coach, Andrew Clifton. Thank you so much for being here today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So today on the podcast, we are going to talk about the myths that are associated with club volleyball that parents and players believe. Now, before we start, some of these myths, there are an element to truth to them. And so I'm going to start by saying that. So they're not completely false, but I think sometimes they're misleading. And we're going to go into this and kind of talk about what we've seen over our longtime careers. And between us, I think we're over 60 years of experience in coaching and well over that in the sport. So it's just like, these are just trends we see. And we also kind of see things a little different. So I'm stoked to have these guys on. So it should be super fun. So the first myth we're going to talk about is this myth that I think is coming more and more lately, it seems like to me, over the past, over the past years, there's been more and more that club volleyball is only for players who want to play in college. Right now, if you're 14 or 13, this may not apply to you, but it just seems like more and more the older kids are stopping playing if they don't think they can play in college. And I think there's some reasons for that, but I think that, that should be a myth. Kids should be playing club volleyball because they love the sport and it needs to be accessible in that way. AC, what are your thoughts on some of that stuff?
I think that myth has become more prevalent throughout the years as high schools have piled on more work and more expectations for the students to have more homework and more things to do in order to get into college. And so I think a lot of them believe that if volleyball isn't worth their time to get into college, then they have to focus on the other means in order to get to college. And I think to add on to that is that, the price of club has gone up.
Yes.
Over the last few years.
For sure.
So it is an investment and being seen as an investment, but I guess the question countering that myth is, what is your investment for? Does it have to be college, or can it be an experience that your athlete or child gets that will frame
their
who
life.
They are as a person and their life growing up and the experiences from playing the club sport?
That's such a good point. The price has become partly why families don't play for fun. Would you agree with that, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But there's so much they're throwing into it now. It's like tons of travel, national tournaments, all this stuff. And I think for some people, some players, it's just not what they need. It's almost like there needs to be different levels. And I know there are, but just maybe even a little bit more credit to those levels of, hey, I'm playing because I like the sport. I want to learn and I want to have a great, like you said, a great experience. I don't know. Sean, what do you think about that?
I think you were going to hit the nose on what I was going to say about this topic. And then I also was going to kind of spin it the other way. Within this topic, I think what's happened is those who still love volley and want to do volley, when the school element is so large or responsibility, they've gravitated to beach.
Okay.
Because that's something that they can kind of own on their own. And if sixth person wants to be inclusionary into that model of kid, I think we have to have formats that allow that to happen, so to speak. Maybe take like the idea. I know we have divisions and club and stuff like that, but the demand maybe needs to be less accelerated, where we'll meet and we'll have a tournament every 3 months. Or we're spitballing here.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. It doesn't need to be as, like, I feel like they almost treat everyone as this elite team.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, I got to do 2 qualifiers or even 3 qualifiers.
Yes.
And, you know, and an invitational tournament and our, you know, regional series. And it's like, that adds up. Right.
But and like you just, said, a lot of kids, yeah. And a lot of kids just like a junior know they're going to make varsity at a program, and they just want to kind of keep their skill set up so that. That senior, and there's nothing wrong with that. That senior year is going to be a rewarding experience. Now, to spin it the other way around, that I was going to say is, and I think kids are more, and maybe you have this a little bit later, so sorry to step on your toes. But to treat it the other way is, there's a myth that if you don't make your high school team, you stop playing too.
Yep.
Too. Mm-hmm. And I think that myth is, and I think both are equally of value to talk about. And I think kids are doing a better job now, and especially those who are on the prestige high schools or really accomplished high schools. Like in San Diego, we have Torrey Pines and Cathedral. There are kids that easily can play college volleyball if they desire to do so, while not being able to necessarily make those elite high school teams.
And that, when you think about that, that's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they're going to be able to play college.
Southern California volleyball.
Yeah,
is what that is.
Yeah, and it's just the strength of those schools, right? There's only so many spots at that one high school, mm-hmm. but there's a ton of colleges, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so these kids would be making varsity programs in about 98% of the programs in San Diego County.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
I think there's a spectrum though to look at with these points being brought up. Like number one, the beach aspect that only is going to hit a particular percentage of the country.
True.
Where that is available. But what you see in those other parts that don't have that beach setting, or like maybe more of a rural setting. So I was a president of a club in a town that had 36,000 people, and we had to kind of build the club from, you know, the ground up, and we had like one team and stuff, and we had to keep our price points a certain way, but the kids that ended up playing were also playing a bunch of other sports, and those kids weren't necessarily looking to go to play in college, but we had to express how this wasn't happening for that. And so that club since then has been able to send a number of kids more than prior to the collegiate level, mostly like JC and things like that. And I think that's the other thing to kind of, you know, address, segueing off of that and talking about like the elite high schools and the eliteness of Southern California volleyball, is that eliteness has become, I think, the overbearing cloud of all club volleyball. And that's why this myth is what it is, because I don't think that the clubs that do this for the reason of building, you know, kids' character or, you know, work ethic and experience, those clubs are kind of like looked down upon in the community of especially the elite volleyball.
Yeah, if they're not winning, right?
Even last night, like Davis and I were talking, and I said, oh, this club closed in Southern California. And he's like, I've never heard of it. But Davis coaches at a 2s team at Coast, so that tells you kind of where that hemisphere is for those clubs. So, and that's the thing, it's like they're out there, those clubs are out there that still have those values that aren't necessarily like, oh, everyone we send has to go play in college or even D1. I mean, this can be even filtered down to like, oh, I'm not going to play if my only chance is junior college.
Right.
And so I think that those two points are something to kind of keep aware of where we are in the culture of club volleyball currently.
Yeah. There are clubs doing that. You're absolutely right, AC. Like there are clubs that are involved in character building and, you know, supporting the community and all those types of things. But I also think, and I think you'd agree with this, there's so many clubs that are so competitively focused that sometimes the values aren't in line with what we were talking about just having a great experience, right? Win or lose. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I think that the club world needs to, especially these elite clubs need, and it would be beneficial for them really to kind of reframe their model and make it more where you have a wider net, not just appealing to the cream of the crop, but also appealing to the kids who, you know, might not make it to that D1. Like, not everybody can be a D1 athlete, but that seems to be what the culture in the club has been really promoting for the last decade or so.
And that's always going to be the difficult thing, though, when with bigger clubs. I mean, it's kind of like it. Perfect example that I can think of is like how we're arguing with socialized medicine in the States, and I'm not just being political here, but we're dealing with socialized. And the argument is, can the United States actually afford that, being as big of a country as it is compared to that of something like Switzerland? I think when you're a smaller type club, we have a competitive club here in San Diego that I thought they held their values a little bit more higher when they were smaller. And now it's harder when you're fielding something like 65 teams.
Yeah. It's definitely more of a challenge. Yeah, because it's difficult to reach people individually, right? Yeah. And it's kind of harder to directly be involved with each and every person. And sometimes the message kind of gets diluted, right? The bigger you get. Now, that's not always true. You know, there are some big clubs that are, you know, like very systematic. Like, I can think T Street, like they almost do the same system in terms of volleyball, you know, stuff
sports
like
performance,
that.
Sports performance, is that way,
yeah,
in Chicago?
Yeah, sports performance. But I don't know as far as, you know, the character piece. And
yeah, for sure.
Just playing essentially for fun.
Right.
Like, well,
you know.
Well, that kind of, in talking about the price, that kind of lands that opportunity to play Finnish club with the idea that, you know, you're not going to play in college other than maybe a club team, because a lot of them still stay in the sport because they love it so much. But that kind of falls into an economical group that can afford it. So,
yes. It's a good point.
That kind of isolates the, you know, and that's where these smaller clubs come into play.
And because of price point, everybody's parents, coaches, even kids, everybody's mindset is to that of the pinnacle.
Yeah, I want to get as much as I can out of this because I'm spending a lot of money to do it. So I think that's a really good point. The other thing, though, I think that people overlook too with this is the just lifelong learning of a cool sport. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can learn volleyball. Like, by the time you're a senior, you still haven't learned a ton of volleyball most of the time. Right. I mean, like, relative to the game as a whole, right? So it's, you can play in order to just learn the game so that you can play more volleyball later. And it's such a fun game that I think that that's something that should happen more. But you're right, the price is limiting, right? If you're going to quote unquote just play for fun, you can't spend $7,000-$10,000 like these clubs are now. It's just not, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, some can, and that's what isolates that group.
That's a good point.
There's a small group that can do it because they can, like, that amount of money might not mean as much to them as it means to,
that's a good point,
someone who is in a different economical place.
And again, back to the idea of mindset. We all, I would venture to say those who that are getting Division I scholarships by the end of their run are probably done. They don't want to play anymore.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know,
take some of the fun out of it.
Take some of the fun out. So again, it's about perspective. Because the more, I mean, Davis, you just saw that movie Whiplash and we talked about it. The more challenged you're going to get, the more physical exertion mm-hmm. that it's going to take out of you. Yes, it builds character, it does all these different things, but the more removed you want to get away from the game once you're done with it.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, some people.
Sometimes. Drives, you're right.
It drives people, them towards it, and some it drives them away, right?
That's true. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But that's a totally good point. So, I mean, again, a myth, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just for players who want to play in college. There are some. No. There is some truth to that. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be that way. If you want to play volleyball, if you want to play club, play club. You know, and get on a team that's fun for you. It doesn't have to be the best team in the country, you know?
I think that's the answer to that myth right there. Sorry to interrupt, but
no,
I think
go.
That's the answer to that myth right there is that the customer has to be willing to do the work to find the best fit for themselves.
Good point.
So if that mm-hmm. means if they're not going to play in college, because maybe they're a brilliant student and the college they want to go to doesn't even offer a team, mm-hmm. then that doesn't mean you have to drop it, but you're going to have to do as a customer some front work to find the club. And that's where I think a lot of these myths are going to fall is mm-hmm. in this category that the customer does not know what they're doing. Generally speaking, they don't know really how to ask the questions to figure out what the best fit is. They don't know how to ask the questions to figure out what the club culture is like. They don't know how to ask the questions about who their coach is and what the abilities are and what they're going to get out of the season. And I think a lot of these myths are going to fall into this category of an uneducated customer that doesn't really, they're basically spitballing most of the time. And a lot of the clients that I talk to that I've coached throughout the past, a lot of their questions have to do with just ignorance to, and not ignorance in a negative sense, but to the true meaning of what it means, just not knowing that mm-hmm. they're ignorant to what these clubs are offering and what's there. And to you know, lifelong coaches like us, we see it plain as day.
And that's the experience. Mm-hmm. That's the experience. We did that podcast before of Groundhog Day.
Yep.
We're knowledgeable just because we've seen the same situations exactly. over and over and over again.
Well, and that's what we're hoping with this pod to bring to people. Meaning, mm-hmm. you know, like it's not true that you only play club if you want to go play in college, right? Even though you may have heard that.
Yeah.
And so we've seen it done well a lot where you don't play in college, but you have a blast playing your senior year on a fun team. You know, I think there's tons of benefit to doing it if you can make it work. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's go to the next one. You guys ready?
Ready.
This one's an interesting one. Playing club will quote, make you good at volleyball. Who wants to start on this one? AC, do you want to go on this one? Why this is a myth?
That's an interesting way of
kind phrasing of it. Yeah, phrasing I did that on purpose. That. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I can't remember a time where I, you know, really heard that myth that way. You know, most of the time it's that playing club volleyball will get you on varsity, or playing club volleyball will equal a college scholarship. Playing club volleyball will make you the best amongst your friends, or whatever it mm-hmm. might be. Like, but as far as like just good,
That's what I mean by that.
Playing club volleyball will make you good at volleyball.
Yeah, it will make you better, right? But I think you're hitting exactly what I wanted to hit. Right. This point that you're going to arrive somewhere simply because you play club volleyball.
Okay. So it's there's a means to an end to it that is guaranteed.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. That's a total myth completely because there's too many factors. I think the top few factors are number one, the kid, the athlete themselves. Mm-hmm. Like they are a canvas. And if their canvas going into it is only, you know, 4x4 inches, you can only paint so much on that canvas. But if if you get, you know, the same on the same team, another athlete whose canvas is, you know, 12 feet by 12 feet, obviously they're going mm-hmm. to be able to do more with it in the long run. And so
yep.
I think that's the first point, is that not all athletes are created equal. And mm-hmm. then I think the other part of that is the it kind of goes, you know, I had a feeling it's going to kind of fall back into this topic of just not know, like the customer not knowing, but mm-hmm. them picking the right club for themselves and picking yep. the right coach for themselves.
Absolutely.
And being realistic about what team they should be on. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, not to their fault, they just don't know how to like look at that stuff. Yep. And I think there needs to be a better job of clubs who do, when a player gets in their club, they need to do a better job of educating the customer about, you know, what they are trying to accomplish and what's best for them. But, you know, it's a definite, you know, club volleyball is a dog eat dog world. And it's a situation where, you know, sometimes you'll get that used club salesman who is going to tell you, promise you the world just to get you in. And that doesn't really benefit that kid that has the smaller canvas.
And that's a great point.
That's where that comes up in this myth, is that, you know, I think of like a club like T Street, and I've just recently moved back to Southern California, so it hasn't been a while. It's been a while, but there's a lot of clubs in the other states that I've lived in that this is the case. And a parent or a player decides to go play for this like big time gold medal, you know, winning club that the top 18s are like incredible, and they're putting all D1, and they think, well, if I just go to that club, that's what I'm going to become.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, no, because that coach isn't your coach,
right?
And you're not that person.
Like, yes, it's a great point.
You have to look at it with more detail, and mm-hmm. I just think there's too broad of a stroke in the whole decision making process.
I think you're absolutely right.
So, yeah.
I think that's such a great point. Sean, do you want to riff on that? Because I think that that's, I think you and I have similar ideas on this. Shawnee?
Davis. Oh, can't, we lost him.
We can barely hear you.
Dude, that's so weird. Sorry, guys. Hold on.
Did your beats plug back in?
Oh, Tony called you. Yeah.
And my whole thing got screwed up here. Give me two seconds.
Okay.
Sorry.
No worries.
You can edit this, right?
AC, yeah, totally. That was so good.
First of all, how do I turn this?
That's exactly where I was going with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was pretty broad. Like, I was like, no, I don't. That was broad.
Well, because that's why I put make you good in quotes. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, what does that mean? Right. For someone, it's like, if I play club, I should make varsity. Right.
I'm back. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
Yes. Okay. So did you hear that, Sean?
I kind of heard I heard most of it. And.
So he was basically saying two ideas, basically that, hold on, I lost my train of thought.
I said that the canvas that, part, did you hear that analogy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's too broad of a stroke to say that to say playing club volleyball will make you good, quote unquote.
Right.
Right, and that once again, the customer is not really educated, so they think like playing for T Street because their 18 ones is good.
Right.
My athlete plays there, they're going to be just like them, and they don't get the same coach, they don't get the same experience, and they're not the same campus. So,
yeah. Right. Why don't you just say it that fast, AC? I'm teasing.
Sean, Sean, call me after, because not call me, but call on me, because I want to add to this one too. But go ahead. I just asked you if you want to riff on this, and then no one could hear what you were saying. So gotcha. Go ahead.
Yeah. So number one, I definitely believe it's a myth.
I think right situation is a huge, huge factor, kind of what AC was kind of springing on a little bit. I've never thought about this analogy to now. I know as a coach, I'm the best for the kid when their eagerness to learn the game matches my ability to teach the game. I think about, and I keep using movie references. This is what I do. I think about Good Will Hunting and Robin Williams trying to get through to Matt Damon's character and not talking to him until he actually do. Now, I don't do that. I'm not saying I do that.
Right.
But I am saying you have to get a buy-in with the player. And once they start expressing themselves, I'm freaking as interested as can be in trying to, I think the best time I'm coaching. And so I'm thinking about the player's mentality. Mm-hmm. Can the player really examine their game? Like, yeah. I think we did as players, rather than me just telling them and yelling at them as to what to do. And I think some players actually do respond better to that than others. But I do think there's a lot that are interested of building and learning the game with a kind of like almost, I almost look at my best coaching style when it happens right as a caddy in golf. Yes. Me and the kid are riffing back and forth. Mm-hmm. About ideas, concepts, because I played, I've been there. I know exactly what's going on. And that's when I'm at my best. And yeah, and then you had something you wanted to add to.
Well, I was just going to say, the big thing that I would disagree with this myth is that anything, quote unquote, makes you good, right? You make yourself good is the way I see it.
Yeah. And I think right? That's what I was trying to say, actually. Exactly. So you said yeah. It better.
well, you hit some great examples. My thing is club volleyball doesn't make you good. Playing volleyball doesn't make you good. Like there's and make you good at AC. Again, it's too broad, right? What does make you good mean? But I just mean like, it's not one thing when you improve, right? When you improve, it's this whole effect that, you know, you're eating right, you're, you know, training, your skill development, whatever. It's not any one thing that you do that's going to make you better. You can play club and get nothing out of it, right? We all know players like that, where they played a whole year for a good coach and still were, you know, the same player they were coming in. Or even for a bad coach, yeah. Or even play for a bad coach and get good, right?
Right.
And it's totally the mindset, like you said, Sean, about the from the player. And like you said, AC, their limits and their expectations. And like you mentioned, trying to get an awareness of where they should be that's appropriate, right? Like you've had a bunch of experience with this, AC, where the kid is just, you know, trying to be up to that level, but they're not quite. And so going up to that level doesn't really help them because they might not play as much. You know, they might be in over their head, whereas if they were on a different situation, they might be able to thrive. Right? Is that?
Can
I ask you guys a question real quick? And this has something to do with it, but not totally. Do we have so much technology that nobody uses it? And I'm talking about the player.
Yes, I agree.
I remember having one Olympic volleyball tape and the tracking was like, you know how when you would watch Goonies over and over again, the tracking would get bad.
Yes.
I think the kids have so much access to technology that they just are like, where if you can put me in a time machine to back to the future, so to speak, and God, I do too many movie references. If you can go back to the future and you can put me as a high school volleyball player with YouTube, oh my God, what a field day I would freaking
have. I know. Absolutely. I have an
answer to this because this is something that I've been doing for years. And my style of coaching and just the way my brain works, I have like Sean has movies in his head. I've got all kinds of like volleyball players from past in my head.
A database. Yeah. I know.
And, exactly what you mean and I that. See, and I'll watch a kid and I'll go, oh, that kid reminds me of like,
yep.
Baricio. Let's say Baricio, for example. And that serve that she has, you know, that this player that I have has just reminds me of her body frame's the same. She moves the same. Like it's just so similar. And the generation, I think that you're right that they have access to stuff that they're not using. Why? I don't know, but maybe because they're busy being, they're being entertained by things other than volleyball. And so I call it an emulation project, and I've done this for years, and I do it with all my private lessons, and I'll watch them throughout a few, and then I'll say, okay, you know, setter, you remind me, first of all, have you ever heard of Lauren Carlini? And they're like, no. And then it's like hand to face, okay, let me show you.
Can I jump in real quick, AC?
Yeah,
like sure. They always say no. Remember how that one kid said yes and we were like, yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he was at a camp and we're like, holy cow, you know players? How do they not know players? Every young basketball player knows basketball players. In volleyball, it does not seem to be the case. I'm sorry. That's my little add-on.
So, and that's what I say. I say there's some kid, some boy in a backyard shooting baskets, and every time he shoots, he goes LeBron for three. Like he's emulating the movements, he's emulating his actions, he's emulating his character, his competitiveness, like every part of him he wants to be. And it's just, you know, when my wife played Division I and she grew up in the 90s the same as I did through the sport, she went to Long Beach State games on a regular basis, like every single game, and sat you know, that floor seats and just watched and watched and watched, and they don't even do that. And that, so in this emulation project, like the first thing I do is assess them. I try to find, you know, okay, who do they remind me of? And then I just, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to do the work for them now, but I at least get the ball rolling for them. And I send them the videos, watch this person, tell me what you see, watch this person. But once again, just like the last myth, it's up to them. Like you can't make them drink. You can just lead them to water.
Right. But I do think I think 99% of the time we do start to work for them. I have this kid right now that listens to this podcast. And I think I could say her name, Abby. And because it's a compliment. And when we've been doing lessons with each other for 5-6 years, and so at first it was getting her to know kind of the vernacular of the way I coach and teach and stuff like that. And I always ask a lot of questions. I think it's a way for kids to for you to understand that something's getting across. Okay is not okay with me. Like you kind of talk to me about it. And now like it's jazz. We riff back and forth about ideas of her game and stuff like that. And again, within a lesson thing, it's a caddy and golf, I think, when it's really done well. So it's kind of an evolution, and it makes sense that it's an evolution because we should know more at the very beginning. But now I would put her as knowing a decent amount of what I know.
Yeah. Well, and it's almost like we want to get them pointed at the right resources. You know what I mean? If we can do that, like the coach should be a resource, but it shouldn't be the only resource. And again, it goes back to what we were all talking about before. Like, club doesn't make you good. You make yourself good, right? Lessons don't make you good. We all know kids that have taken hundreds of lessons that, you know, haven't panned out really as players at the highest level because lessons don't make you good. I mean, they help. They definitely are something that can help. Can help a motivated player, you know what I mean? But it's again, it's just part of the player. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah. I would believe yeah. that if you've got two players, let's say both setters, and player A is more physical than player B and has a better start game to play at the D1 level, let's say, and they both begin the game on the same club team, same coaches from the age of like 14 through 18. And player A with the more physicality doesn't really invest in the sport. She just plays it and is good. And player B invests in the sport and watches mm-hmm. the Olympics, watches the, you know, Pac-12 on TV. She's laying on the ground and using her weighted ball on commercials, and she's like seeing mm-hmm. it and stuff. I would, as an ex-college coach, much rather recruit player B, knowing that even though their start point isn't even, I know player B's ladder eventually will probably be higher.
Yeah. And they see, that's kind of how you and I were as players. We really weren't that great when we were younger, but we were so into it.
Yeah.
This, well, that actually, and by the way, that what AC just said takes us into another myth where tryouts do not necessarily give the right answer. Ooh. Because that's the one thing what AC was just saying. You can't see that at tryouts.
Yeah.
You can't, it's so, because everybody has their best first day of school.
Yes.
Kind of, right. You know, taking notes and attentive and looks the part. And then all of a sudden, first week of practice, good. Oh, and then like, you know, a month in, you're starting to see some habits not necessarily form the right. way that's intact with the team.
Yep.
And meanwhile, that one girl that just barely didn't make it over the other is kicking butt a team down. And, well, and like, that's, darn it.
That is so hard. That is so hard. And that actually brings me into the next one. Unless you guys had something to add on.
No,
to that.
I think we're good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But I'm going to roll these ones all together because these all three kind of go together. But that brings us right into the next one. It is really difficult for a coach at tryouts to discern players that are really close in ability, right? And so then you go to those extra things, right? Like, are they practicing at home? Are they, you know, watching video, whatever? You can't tell those things at tryouts, right? So I think this myth comes up all the time, is that club volleyball is all political, right? So how are you going to take so-and-so over me? I'm better than her, right? And I think this is a myth, first of all. Let me put it like this. I think there are politics for sure at play in club volleyball. Right. But I would say it's not all political. I would say it's too competitive, especially on the top teams, for it to be all political, quote unquote.
I like that question. Yeah. I mean, that way you said it, because usually it's talked about the other way, because that's your point of view. Like, everybody's going to complain, you know?
Right. Yes. So.
As if the coach isn't trying to do their best to build the team that fits them, or, you know, or fits their goals.
And here's the thing,
as if they're just picking their best friend. Like,
I think another podcast is, why are we wrong and not mm-hmm. political?
Yes. Yeah.
because here and let's use the NFL, the sixth round quarterback is the best player in NFL history.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you've seen his mugshot, for a better word, at the combine, he does not look like Cam Newton out there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so one of the things that I think happens all the time at tryout is athlete versus player. Mm-hmm. And we go into arguments all the time about players that you know can ball, and man, does the coach get imaginative about the athlete.
Yep.
I can make that person into this and mm-hmm. watch that person soar, but look at Tom Brady, for crying out loud.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Like, yeah, there's people. I think we need to start talking more and more about how does that person
see patterns, read the game, movement qualities. There are people, some people are better. I had a buddy of mine that I used to play basketball all the time with. And just as sheer athleticism, he surpassed me in every single way. But I was on par with him because I think I'm a good ball player. And it really doesn't matter the sport. He was not nearly as good at understanding angles and movement patterns of what the person was going to do. Mm-hmm. But God, the guy could go up and down the court and soar like nobody's business, you know?
Right.
And I think we need, I'd love for science to kind of catch up in that realm to help us figure out how to go ahead.
I've got something to kind of riff off that. Number one, like that, what you just described was my volleyball career. I could barely jump. I could barely jump over a duck.
Me too, by the way.
But somehow made it to Division One. Well, not somehow, but made it to Division One and played on a top 10 team in the nation.
Because I was there with AC, not at D1 at UC Irvine, but on the way up, right? And if you had a tryout, you would not be the first guy selected.
Well, I wasn't.
Absolutely. But I'm saying if you played and you played for a long time, you move to the top of the ladder. You're that type of player. Do you know what I mean? Volleyball intelligence, just simple passing ability. Like, they don't do a ton of passing, live passing, especially in tryouts.
The idea of a stabilizer in tryouts is, and especially like ones, they have a good idea. Twos, they got a decent idea, but threes, fours, they don't know for sure who's going to be the outside hitter that's going to be able to stabilize the court for you and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
They don't know that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Something that I learned coaching at the collegiate level in recruiting and some lessons I kind of had to learn along the way and get some help from my buddy Ryan Ford was that really the best way for a coach to pick their team is to find the players that best fit them, not necessarily the level of team.
Good point.
And I express this a lot to like the clients I work with when they're upset that maybe tryouts didn't go the way they wanted or something, or even getting recruited to a college. And I tell them it's a lot like acting. You may be the best actress, but if the part doesn't fit you, if you're a blonde 5'9" and they need a short Latino, you could be the best actress, you're not getting the part.
Right. It's like, a great analogy.
The way it is. Like, and so these coaches, like Sean said, they have like they see tryouts and they go, I can make this kid this. Now the problem is a lot of the coaches are just spitballing. They're not really getting deeper into like who the kid is and does the personality fit. Like, you know, something I like to do is actually talk to the kids and find out where their sense of humor is.
Actually talk to them? What?
Right. But most of the time, but think of those conversations at tryouts. Like, they're like, are you trying out any other clubs? If we offer, will you say yes or no? Like, that's about it. That's not like, hey, you know.
Yes. That's kind of why I was laughing. Yeah, it's like, you mean actually talk to the player?
Like,
you have to be able to have some rapport with them in order to understand them. If you don't, how you're just, it's kind of like prejudice in a sense. You're prejudging them without really knowing
the person. That's where the politics word
comes in. Yes, 100%.
That's why there's now like 2 weeks of pre-tryout clinics, and there's like four weeks of like private lessons with the coach who you want to make their team with. And it seems political, but in actuality, it's really kind of helping the coach.
That's the way it should be for sure. Like, I just think about college and you're going to be revealed with time.
Right.
What's Wooden's sports doesn't provide character, it reveals it. Right. And within the realm of time, you're going to be revealed. And the more that time can stretch out, the more your masks are going to be starting to be removed.
It's a great point.
And yeah. So,
well, and I would just say, often, to your point, AC, it's not the best player that gets selected. It's the player that fits that coach's team, that coach's style, whatever. And that appears to be political, right? It's like, well, she, you know, why is she on the team? I'm better than her. And I have seen that all the time. I mean, I really do. I see that all the time where a player on the second team is better than a player on the first team, but the player on the first team is willing to accept a certain role, right? They're willing to, I don't know, maybe not play or whatever. And that doesn't mean that the player below them is not more competent. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think people misinterpret that as politics. I don't know if I don't know what to call that.
I call it intangibles. Well, intangibles. Like I say to kids all the time, if you're one of the best players on the team, you're probably in. No worries. Good job.
Right.
when you know you're stressing out, now all of a sudden coaches are going to measure these things. Who's the kid that's talking the most? Who's the kid that's working the most? Who's the kid that you said before that can handle and accept a role that isn't necessarily as desirable when it comes to playing time?
Yeah.
Those qualities absolutely unequivocally matter, and it's the only reason why I played in college.
Well, and I would even say, like, on a team, when you're putting a team together as a coach, so-and-so's friend being on the team, even though the friend isn't better than the next player in line, it may benefit the team to have that dynamic.
Who was the guy with Rodman all the time? Remember that? There was a white center. Right?
Oh, like, Will Perdue?
No, it wasn't him, but he's in that lane. And he was the Rodman whisperer, basically. Oh, okay. He collected checks for about 5 years when his NBA playing days were done. But him and Rodman, he could keep Rodman in line just enough that it was a value on the team. Right, and that isn't wrong, by the way.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. That's not political. Well, I mean, it's something like intangible.
Like the coach isn't trying. Yeah, it's not like the coach is not trying to do their best. Like what? Like it's like when a parent tells me that, the only reason they're setting that girl is because they're best friends.
Yes.
And it's like no, it's because she can only set outside and she's scared to back set. Like that's why.
Yeah.
It's, or that girl is crushing it. Why would we set someone else? Like
yes.
Let me fork this into a question for you guys, because this is something I'm curious on your take on this is, do you believe on a sliding scale that club hopping has directly affected the word politics in club volleyball? And where I'm going with this is, long ago when dinosaurs roamed the earth and people were playing club volleyball, they would stay with their club. And so you would be able as a coach to keep that assessment throughout the time they started till they ended in the club. Mm-hmm. But now that there's all this club hopping, it's made tryouts more difficult for the coach because we're seeing these kids for such a short amount of time trying to make an assessment.
I think that's a great point. I would agree with that. And I think we would all agree club hopping, at least in our area, is increasing, like, and has been increasing for a while. And then, right, you don't know that player from the last year, right? Now, for some players, that works to their benefit in a bad way, if you know what I mean. Like, they have a negative track record, so they club hop, and then they get a fresh look. Now, that can be good, right? It can be good for the player, and it can also be a little bit misleading at times for the coach. So it's a difficult dynamic. You're right. If more kids stayed at the same club, then you'd have much more rapport with them. That's for sure.
Right.
You know?
No, I think you guys said it. I think it's totally true. It builds less knowledge of what you have to deal with, or what you're grading or evaluating. So, yeah, There's no doubt about it.
Well, yeah, and then I would go back to what you said, AC, again, about it, the consumer, the families, being aware, right? So they're not aware a lot of times of all these little internal team dynamics that the coach is aware of, right?
Right.
So they need to, A, they need to find out, and then B, they need to – so here's the thing, and this goes me into the next one, right? Here's the myth, okay? Playing on anything besides a top team, quote unquote, is not worth your time in club, okay? So a lot of people have this mentality, I think. I believe it's a myth because, well, A, I never played on a ones team. I played on really good teams, but not on ones teams in club, and I got really good, and the same with a lot of people I know. But so there's some case studies there. But I guess what I mean is, I think this is totally common, right? I didn't make this team, and I'm going to go elsewhere. We were just mentioning that. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's totally true, and I think that's a reason you're not seeing that 15 fours kid move up to the 16 twos as much anymore.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yes.
You know, like I remember us seeing, now it could be that they've just been playing at a longer time than it used to. Like when you have that prodigy come in, walk in and just, hey, I'm going to try out for freshman volleyball, make her team. And now she walks in and makes the fours. And then the next year you go the twos. Maybe that's the reason why too. But I definitely think when I don't get my way, I'm out.
That's what I was going to say. And that's the club hopping. And that's kind of what, going back to what AC was. So it's this kind of like cycle. It's like, I don't get what I want, so I club hop. And then it's political, right? Because they don't really know me. And that's how I think these myths kind of go together to form this kind of, I don't know, sort of strange line of thinking. And that's why I was just kind of,
I mean, warning. Let me ask you this. Like, is resiliency lacking because motivation of always trying to find the best situation? Is that now a truth?
I know what you're saying. I think that's a very good question to ask. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah.
I think resilience is lacking. Okay. It's the stock of resiliency has gone down in our youth over the last 20 years. Like, bad. Why? I think a lot of different factors, but I do think one of those factors is that instant gratification, like instant success.
Yeah.
And the idea that, you know, this journey you've decided to do to try to be the best volleyball player you can be is not, it's a mountain that you have to climb.
And we see it now. We see it now right in front of us in reality television that is sports. Mm-hmm. Like LeBron abandons ship and goes to Miami.
So the role models are doing it.
Yeah. Like this is just the nature of the way sport, where Michael was resilient. And part of it, he never even considered it. It just wasn't an option.
Well, but there's other cool guys that that sounds weird, but there's other guys that are really
like Giannis.
Giannis.
Way to go. Way to get yours. Yeah.
Well, and no, Dame Lillard, he hasn't even got his, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He stayed. So, I mean, I it's weird. Like, I don't think you have to accept that mentality, but I think it's definitely out there. Right.
I think it's easier to accept that.
I mean, I think using LeBron as an example is perfect, but I think what the young athlete and parents are missing is that you're not a professional athlete who's getting paid millions of dollars. Like, you do not have to leave a smaller market for a bigger market because you have ventures in the future coming up that are going to affect
AC, I will play devil's advocate with you on that one a little bit, in the sense of the cost point that they're providing. They are looking for or dreaming up that scenario, at least, because of the ducats that they're putting into the thing.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that they're comparing themselves equally if they're using, I believe they are,
No, I know.
I don't believe that they're looking at it in the sense of apples and oranges.
And I don't blame them necessarily. I think if anything, within the people that listen to this, we're hoping to bring some clarity.
Yes.
Because I don't fault them for having the perspective they necessarily do, considering the investment, the investment of money, the investment of time, all those things. So there's no fault
and ego
in their mindset being that way, in my opinion.
Well, right.
Well, but and I would add ego. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say there's nothing wrong with that, but I also think it gets the best of all of us, unfortunately. I hate to see that on the team selection time. So sometimes what happens is they don't make the team they want. They don't make the top team and they'll just quit. They'll straight up quit. And I'll be like, I'm kind of always flabbergasted by that. I'm like, wow. You know, you're not going to play volleyball at all because you didn't make the team. No,
see, I don't think it's as easy as that though, Davis, anymore. I think it's they'll go to the beach.
Well, yes.
And, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And how many, and I know of a high school, I make a reference all the time about this high school, where they put, they take off their sandals to put on their shoes because they're all beach kids.
Yes.
And they're pretty good. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah. But
they're all beach kids, you know? And so,
but I guess what I'm getting at is like to AC's point about resilience, if I don't make the team that I want, and I go to a team where I'm maybe one of the best players on the team, I think a lot of people see that as a negative. They always want to play with people that are better than them, of course. But I have this great quote that Mary Jo Pepler said to one of the parents. She said, "I was the best player on every team I ever played on, and I'm the best player ever." Right? At the time, she was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the point is, I think everyone's looking to have the situation make them better versus them making their situation.
See,
better.
I would say this, though. I would say at the time of tryouts, that's the way they're looking at it. But then you get into the season, that kid that barely made that one's team's pretty upset.
Yes, exactly.
and that kid that made the twos and is playing six rows is going, all right.
Exactly.
We're pretty good.
Well, and this comes into like the category that I was saying before about the customer not knowing what to look for.
Yes.
So you may go to a club and you're like, I'm going to make this ones team. And they go, sorry, we want to offer you this twos team. But we just hired this coach who's an ex-college coach who has over 20 years experience and has a track record that's unbelievable. And they turn it down because it doesn't have a one next to the team name. I was just going to say, like, this is an experience that I went through in one of the states that I was coaching club in, and literally had people deny me. Now, fast forward through the season, my team won more than they were expected to win. We ended up beating the teams that were ahead of us in scrimmage. At the time, the players who got in were not exactly excited about their situation. But once they kind of bought in and went through the whole process, they saw it at the end. But it's like, how do we as coaches give that clarity and that perspective to a customer when all they're seeing is the number and not the price, but the number next to their name or the next to their team name?
And they're getting a sales job. A lot. I mean, you know, everyone's telling them, and this I believe is unethical, is to tell them that they'll be in a certain role and then they don't become in that role. I think that's unethical.
Do you think that's happening out there right now? Just what?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. What do you think, Sean? Well, we know it's happening, but what percentage?
What percentage out there?
That's a tough question to answer. I know, but
I'd say about 20%.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking 15, 20.
Oh, wow.
What do you think?
You got higher?
Way higher. Way higher. I would say 50%.
I mean, I just...
Countrywide.
I,
Countrywide, where they tell them they're going to have a certain role, and then
where they tell them they're going to. I think, and here's my take. I think that that is the majority, even like maybe 51.1%.
Wow.
I think it's the majority, and here's why. I think that, and Davis and I have had this conversation a ton. Coaching has completely changed in the last 15 years as far as volleyball goes. And we now have a generation of kids who are now becoming coaches who maybe didn't get the particular skill set coaching that we might have gotten growing up and the ones before us. And so now it's kind of, coaches have turned into more like baseball managers, where they're just managing lineups. And I've seen a lot of practices across the country in the last 10 years, and a lot of them are a lot of scrimmaging, a lot of like play makes you better. And so what I've seen happen because of that is that in order for these clubs to get kids in the door, they have to have a big sales job. Like, it's become more about advertisement, marketing, selling the club. And like, true story, we just had tryouts out here in Southern California recently for high school girls. We had clients come back to us and say that they went to this club, and do you want to know what they were most impressed with? Flat screen TVs with the logo on it in the gym.
Right.
Yeah. I was thinking about bringing this up. It's college football. You see those locker rooms that they that they have, in the resources that they, the equipment that they have. They have game rooms, they have barbershops, they have, you know,
and then,
like,
and then that's not really football related.
No,
but they see that and they want to go there. Yeah. Right? Right. But it's not the actual content of the program.
Correct.
And that's correct. That's the thing. Yeah.
And I think that's where clients and the customer is kind of missing. It's like, I was talking to someone, and I go, if I said used car salesman, everyone would know what I've been talking about. But if I said used club volleyball club salesman, no one would understand what that means. But I think that a lot of directors who don't have the content of the club that needs to be there sell the flash. It might have a brand new paint job on it. It might have like, and that's what gets them in the door, but then they don't, the customer doesn't do enough research to really.
You know, what's interesting is just look at our society as a whole. That used to be the like Rocky III, I think he trains in a like in like a gym that's like, you know, flashy, and then by Rocky IV he's like in the woods in the snow,
right,
like, working out with an axe. Right. And our mindset was like, you know, raw and stuff. And I know, movie reference again.
Right, yeah. You need your own podcast, Sean.
I can do it. Podcast. I can just go, yes, coaching with movies.
I think there's some good analogies there for sure. And I mean, I don't want this to be a criticism of the generation. Do you know what I mean? I think what we're trying to do is sort out how people can figure it out a little bit better. And I think what you're saying, AC, is very valid. They need to ask questions. When I say they, the parents, I love it when people ask me, what's your coaching philosophy?
Right, right.
And people hardly ever do. They just roll with it, you know? No. I have another point on this later, but it's a really interesting question, you know? If you don't play for it, it's just so much about perception, right? And is perception what we should be basing it off of? That's, I think, the question. And how do we discern between the two? And that's not easy.
One of the things that I'm really been pushing and been talking about to the clubs that I've worked for is I believe that and this is a direction that I want to go as an administrator in a club, is educating our own clientele. So at the end of the season, meet with the parents and say, listen, your kids got a lot better. They're going to get recruited by other clubs now. And here is a list of common things that they're going to say to you. And here are your questions back. So for example, when they say, we guarantee you're going to start, an easy question back is, do the other players you've offered know this? Mm-hmm. Because they're probably telling every kid that, just to get them in the door. And then when they don't start every game, they go, oh, well, we have your money. And you've
got well, that's the most amazing thing, is that that thing. I think I think there's also like that one, you can go, okay, I'm stuck this year and I'm out. If you got misinformation, now your kid's riding the pine.
But that creates the club. This is where maybe probably where club hopping's coming.
Sure. Or playing three rows. Right. But my thought about that, and I don't know because I don't do it, but I think there are sales pitches that make it insinuate that you're getting six rows while not necessarily actually saying you're getting six rows.
Right.
Yeah, they kind of lawyer you with language. I didn't say it that way. I said
right,
it.
Right.
And I don't know the language because
it's almost like you have a good chance of being a starter on this team.
Yes. Yes. A very like good chance. You know, yeah,
something
and
like
everybody
that.
Gets that. I mean, and obviously that one, but I would think that maybe it's possible that it's even better language than that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've lost players because I straight up will not guarantee anyone a role.
Yeah,
I'm just like, you earn it. That's the way we do it on my teams, you know. And I have had teams where I've been obligated to have a kid be a starter. And it creates team dynamic issues, I think, that are, challenging for sure.
Well, when you do give that trump card away, you're almost, if that kid wants to be unethical back, she's entitled to.
Yeah, she can, right? Yeah. Because, she's got that sort of
promise. I always say that the one thing about the competitive culture a thing about the competitive culture that can be done poorly is your best player only has to be as good as your second best player. It doesn't mean she doesn't have to, like, you would want your best player to stretch her out to her highest level. Right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you would, like a setter, for instance. A setter you would want, no, I'm about 10% better than Grace. You know what I mean? Like, and that's all it needs. That's all she needs to be. So she's always going to see the court rather than pushing herself. And I think that is something that the competitive culture can bring that negatively in a way.
Yep.
So,
well, and that's where I think that goes right into this myth, right? If you're not on a top team, the culture is not going to make you better. And again, this goes to AC's point. You make yourself better, right? Like you have to figure out what a good situation for you is, of course. But if you're only along for the ride, like you were just mentioning, Sean, that's not really advantageous as you just going for it for yourself in whichever role you are. I can think of a number of players that have just, in my opinion, not made the team that they should have, quote unquote, but then they thrived on the team that they were on and ended up having great experience, played in college, you know, all these things. Right. So, I mean, those are sort of my myths, but I'm curious what you guys got. What do you got? Is there any myths that come to mind for you with club volleyball?
Yeah. I would say, you know, I had to when you asked me. The first one's kind of a little joke, but we don't have to get too much into it. But just, you know, the hotness of the coach does not directly affect how good of a coach they are.
Whoa! Thank God for that.
I know.
But
for real.
I'm not a model by any means.
You're not. You were.
No, I tried a long time ago. Didn't work out. Still miserably. But I see it a lot now. It's like they're picking the, you know, the hot new shiny coach who looks great in a polo, or, you know, has just come off a great playing experience and they're playing beach and, oh, they play beach. And it's like, yeah, but how long have they been doing coaching volleyball? And
yeah,
I think that's one that I just wanted to touch on, and we can talk about that. But then the other one, you know, I think is a lot more serious, but it's playing time does not matter more than, or the myth is playing time matters more than practice time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. I have some thoughts on both of those, but Sean, you want to go on anything? Yeah.
On
either one of those. No, oh, on okay,
gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha. The first one, his first one's totally true. Ted Williams managed the Washington Senators for half a year and quit because he didn't understand why players couldn't hit like he could. and I think sometimes with the star player that's a coach, and I think that's usually that what we're talking about, is the game came easy for them. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that, but and Karch is probably one of the exceptions to the rule, mm-hmm. where, and that's what made him so great, is the game did come easy for him, and yet he was still looking for an angle on how to better himself and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
So that's the first one. And I believe I always say your club experience is the players around your kid and your coach. Because these things are too big. And so finding a model, because I will disagree or push back with AC some in the sense of I agree with his overall assessment, but I think it's up to the player to find what's the right fit for them, so to speak. Right. And I also think AC's probably done more 16 to 17, 18 type level of play, where I would subscribe right into that theory, where sometimes at 12, 13, when we're all trying to figure it out, right. I do think playing time is a little bit more valuable than in the higher, as you become more and more, you know, a varsity player and stuff of that level.
Yeah. But I think, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to,
you go. Sorry.
It's my show. it's my topic, my show now. I would say with the Karch thing first, I think that if you saw him coach club back in, because he coached his son's teams a few times,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of, from what the story is, he walked away from it because it was really frustrating for him. Now that's third, fourth person, I don't know, but he now he's coaching, and his success is because he's coaching the athlete that is
he was.
Yeah, at his level. So
yeah.
it's congruent. And the on the other point of the playing versus practice, I guess my point isn't that, and some, you know, parents or players might be hear that and be like, well, I never want to play for him because I want to play. And practice is like not where it is. But I think the point is that coming from myself, it's like, I make sure everyone plays every tournament. Is it mm-hmm. equal? No, it's not right. equal. But that is earned in practice. But how do you get more time on the court? You do better in practice. You focus on the skill sets that are being taught. You believe in the system that's being implemented. You become a better teammate. You go through those fires together as a team to build your camaraderie and your chemistry to have more of a chance to play on the court. But this is kind of where, like, Davis said too, like, I've lost players because they're like, can you guarantee playing time? And I'm like, no, like, I can guarantee that your athlete will get better this season. They're going to finish the season better than they started. And that happens in practice. And then games is where they implement it and where I get an opportunity to assess it and then go back to the to practice to rework out the areas to make it better.
Yeah. And if I could add to that real quick, it's like, I think there is this, and there is this myth that, you know, I got to be playing in the tournaments to get better. I think, and I don't think that's true. You got, I think you can get better from practice. And I think that's kind of what AC is saying. It's like, I think sometimes practice is underrated, right? Classic Allen Iverson, right? We're talking about practice, you know, but the best players engage practice, like full on engage practice. They love practice. You know what I mean? And I think that that's kind of AC's point is like, there's this big push to play. And we play in so many tournaments and so many matches, by the way, in club, that there's not a lot of training time. And it seems to be getting smaller and smaller in terms of training time. So I definitely can see where you're coming from on that, AC.
So I guess the one thing that I will always say is I struggle sometimes with the ultimate, you play your best competitive culture. And I'm not, AC already explained, and I probably definitely agree with his model. You play your best six, seven, what eight, whatever it needs to be, and everybody else be damned. And the funny thing about that model to me is your best can be, and especially at the level that we're at, your best can be better just because they're better athletes and stuff like that. And it doesn't make them necessarily equipped to be a great practice player that they're going to be when the model gets a little bit more heightened and closer, where kids are, you know, in college, when you're trying to decide who's the starter and who's not. And so like, I look at Shaq in that way. I bet you Shaq didn't have, things came so easy for him that he probably wasn't the best practice player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
These habits didn't necessarily form. And that AAU coach that probably had him didn't necessarily care because he was winning with Shaq. Right. And so I do think there's an inherent problem with that. Of how to measure those intangibles of work ethic and practice when you have greatness or overpowering greatness within the team at your hand, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Well, I think it's also like good to understand too, as a, you know, club player or client or parent of a club player, that I would say between the three of us, I would say less than 90% of my whole coaching career, I ended with the same starting lineup that I finished with.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep.
Like it changes so much, but where is that science lab for the coach to work that out? They're not doing it in tournaments because it's really risky. Right. And it's very
well. And then AC, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no.
I have a huge problem with tournament structures. To have, I think there should be more friendlies, and maybe every quarter you're meeting for something that could get you an at-large JO's bid, or something of that nature. Because the problem is, I don't blame coaches for this. When everybody is striving to get a bid, you're not able to support all the players that need to be supported, if that's the overall goal within the perception of the parents, the club, and the team.
Right.
You know, and to me, I think there should be more friendlies.
I agree.
So
with that.
So that way we can get these kids that are better. And one of the things that drives me crazy is I had a kid 5 years ago that I played a ton. She was 6'3" as a 14-year-old. And I played her a ton because she's 6'3" as a 14-year-old, and she wasn't very good by any means. And she ended up playing, I forget where she, but somewhere in D1, and had a good career. And the point of that is, obviously, that's an easy outlier. There's so many others that are not.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Sean, do you have any other myths you want to add to your
mine was more kind of at the starting line. I would say, look, when your kid is first starting out, sixes is probably not the way to go.
Okay, so what's the myth?
The myth is starting out at 6-on-6 volleyball. I think when you are first getting adequated to the game, I think you should be playing doubles and sometimes 1-on-1 and stuff of that nature.
Okay.
You need to be able to, the game is built by patterns. The game is built by technique, and you have to be smaller. Like the Brazilian model of small volleyball is such a big deal of, you get kids out there, they learn how to, they have these mini volleyball courts, and they just learn on something that's on a court that's more their size, really low nets. So you're not going to be athletic. Because you're not as athletic then. So those are the types of things that I think needs to happen. And then I'm trying to remember my second one. Thank God I wrote it down. go ahead and add on to that.
I agree with that. I mean, the thing about sixes is there's so much standing around. Like, you want them to work towards sixes, obviously.
Yes.
But it's just not all that realistic to play because it bores them, right? Yes. You want to be part of the action. You want to hook their attention. And if you're playing sixes and they never get set, and that's probably the case if they're hitting a five, if they're just starting up, right? It's like, is that fun versus playing doubles or even, like you said, 1-on-1 where they're touching the ball every single time?
And my second myth is ugly volleyball is not bad. Or wait, ugly volleyball is bad. That's my second myth. Ugly volleyball can be good.
Yes, there you go.
Because of pattern building. One of the things I did a boys beginning thing recently, and I've always been reluctant to coach boys a lot because I kind of bought into some of the stereotype of guys never ask the gas station attendant for directions, that kind of stereotype. I know how to do it, coach.
Right. Yeah.
And so I've been, gosh, maybe 7-8 years removed from any boys kind of program. And what I did is I built this doubles, this short court mentality kind of program, and talked and just really provided patterns for them. Mm-hmm. Like, they love this game. Catch, toss, hit, if that makes sense. And you're playing doubles on a shorter court, and it's just catch, top, toss, hit. And we're really trying to preach to the kids speed because you're trying to develop patterns. So we bridge the idea of catch to kind of make sure rallies happen. But within the realm of that, we want speed, so patterns happen too. And the more you kind of create these kind of rules for them, and we end up going pass, catch, throw, hit too, man, the rallies are starting to pick up a lot more in that way. And so my point of view is modify, but ugly is okay.
Yeah. And I think I 100% agree with that. I think ugly is actually very good. It's not even okay. It's what you need. I think everyone tries to be clean, but in the game, you're just not clean. It's just not the way it works. And the way I've told it to some people is, like, I've literally played full tournaments where I never got the ball passing wise on my sweet spot.
Yeah.
Right. Like, full tournaments where, I mean, I was passing and I was passing decently enough to make it through a whole tournament, you know, without getting the ball in my sweet spot once. The game is up.
Yeah. I'm a newcomer to the ugly side of the game. more recently, I should say more in the last 5 years or so, because I'm such a technically sound coach as far as like making sure the techniques are correct, and because it's the one variable in the sports you can control is yourself. And I recently have become a lot more open to the idea that training is okay when it's ugly, but it's really still hard for me to accept the coach that just rolls the balls out and that's their motto. It's almost like, for me, an excuse for them not to coach.
Well, absolutely. And that, I 100% think.
What do you think?
I think it takes an eye to be that kind of coach. You really have to do that. It's not just rolling the balls out. You know what I mean? So I think that's a really good point.
So I think my rule, so to speak, is technique is just as valued as pattern movement, as pattern building. And I just think a lot of times we can just really rely so much on or try to build technique that the connection or the bridge of the game of bump, set, spike, base shift, whatever it is within the realm of six person or even doubles. And most of the time I'm talking about doubles when I'm dealing with beginners. That seems to kind of just go away. And it's just this rep where they're not able. So even when you're technically sound, they're not able to connect the dots of bump, set, spike right away. And so I try to implement the technical aspects of the game while building the pattern and rhythms that are associated when the game gets, you know, and I'm saying rhythm when I can't keep a darn beat. No. Believe me. I knew I was snapping my fingers and I'm like, yeah, that's probably not a beat because it's me.
And I'm not addressing you. I just think that, there's been a lot of, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with this, but a lot of talk in the coaching community the last decade or so, if not a little bit more, of, you know, let athletes be athletes and the game is ugly, let it be ugly. And it's come across over the last decade plus to me as just an excuse for coaches not to train their eye and learn. And now, and this kind of going back to a point I made earlier, is that we're getting a younger generation who have been raised in that setting, that ugly volleyball is volleyball, that athletes be athletes, and you just basically manage your team and play a lot, and they'll get good at playing. But it's kind of, now we're in a situation where those coaches who are now coming up didn't go through the experiences, say, someone like the three of us went through when we were learning the game, and you were being held accountable for how you did it, not just putting points on the board. And I think this is why I subscribe to it now, is I've kind of found that personally, that happy medium that, yeah, ugly volleyball is fine and it's going to be ugly. But at the same time, that can't be, as a coach, something you lean on as an excuse to not hold them accountable for their techniques or their skill set.
I don't disagree. I think two things. I think if you're a coach that you don't know what you're doing, it's better to go ugly than to be technical and not know what the heck you're talking about. That's something that's happening a ton. Secondary, and especially when we're talking more beginning volleyball than anything else. I think it's rules that you put into place to get the desired result that you want within the structure of the drills that you're doing. So that's kind of my belief. And I rep a ton of serve receive. I rep a ton of serving. I'm doing more hitting now within line of setting than I used to within the first, 40, 45 minutes of my practice. And then probably the last hour and 15 is then rules within the realm of play predicated to some of the weaknesses that I want our team to kind of address to build and get better. Mm-hmm. So So I do think from now, the problem with the unskilled coach is maybe they just keep being that way and they don't grow and learn. And that is problematic. I would totally agree.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a catch 22 because it is easier. And kids will have more fun with it, which I also think is another important thing. Is that
but I think AC's got a point too. Easier is not necessarily better, and I think it maybe has swung.
No, I know, and that was it was more of an insult to that beginner coach that they're not growing and expanding their game because hey, this is fine.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely.
Like that's wrong. It should be. Redefining, it's addressing some of your weaknesses as a coach and understanding different. I mean, God, the stuff I know now versus the stuff I didn't know then and I thought I knew everything then, it's like night and day.
Right. Yeah, totally. Man, well, we've definitely hit a lot of really interesting stuff, and I feel like we could talk a lot longer. Obviously, we're good friends and we do this all the time, so it's super fun. But I hope we provided some clarity for people about some of these, you know, myths that do have some truth to them, right? But I hope we've provided a little clarity about what people can do to kind of counteract some of these things and just make the most out of their situation, right? Anything before we go, AC?
No, just thanks for having me on. I thought this was a really great discussion and super informative, and I think that people out there in the volleyball world that listen to it, I think are going to get something from it. So, and this podcast has been rocking. So keep it up, man.
Cool. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I know you got a busy schedule. Sean, anything you want to tell everyone?
No, I was less nervous this time, so I feel like
yeah. No, you did great, and hey, we had. I think it was fun, and I think I learned something too. I mean, for sure. And I always do. And I love that. So I'm in 30 years. You guys are in like 30 years deep. And if we're learning stuff, I think anyone who listens might learn something too. And that's the hope, right? So anyways, thank you so much for coming on, you guys. I appreciate it. And feel free to check us out on Instagram at the Volley Nerd Podcast, on TikTok at the Volley Nerd Podcast, and on Facebook at the Volley Nerd Podcast. And volley on. We'll be right back.